Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
What's up, Startup Hustle? This is Andrew Morgans, founder of Marknology. Here is today's host of the podcast. I'm super excited about today's guest. I've been on her podcast, and now I'm getting a chance to, like, you know, highlight her here on Startup Hustle. We're going to be talking about, you know, evaluating a new product idea. But like always, before we get started, I got to give a shout out to our sponsor for today's episode. Today's episode of Startup Hustle is specifically powered by Fullscale.io. Hiring software developers is difficult. Fullscale can help you build a software team quickly and affordably, and as the platform to help you manage that team. We know that your team is only as good as you can manage them. Visit Fullscale.io to learn more. Without further ado, Isabella, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me today. I'm very excited.
Yes, it's overdue. I'm so glad we connected. You know, this industry is big, and at the same time, sometimes it's like, how was I in this industry so long without, you know, our paths crossing? And it seems like even in the last few months, they've crossed a few times. So I'm super excited to have you here. You know, we have a lot of things in common outside of Amazon, you know, different, but the same in regards to, like, even at one point living down the street or in the neighborhoods similar to each other in Moscow. And yeah. I just like bringing that up. It's probably the one person in the world I'll ever meet that will understand, you know, that. And let's start the show off by just getting to know, you know, you a little bit better. And before we get into, you know, your company, Risk Momentum, and everything that you guys do to help sellers and help brands, like, really get started, let's talk about, you know, entrepreneurship. Let's talk about you in the early days. Grew up in Eastern Europe. Is that correct?
Grew up at the place where you've been living at some point, which is Moscow. So I was born in Moscow in the 80s. It's a very scary number right now. Anyway.
Me too. No, it's not. No, it's not.
Yeah. So I never liked to live in Moscow for a very long time because it was always cold. And I was trying to look for something warm. And when I turned my 18 years old, almost at 18 years old, I asked my mom to give me a waiver so I can actually go somewhere overseas by myself. And that was after I created my own company. And the first company I created was a business training center. I was at the age of 17.
And let's pause right there for a second. I want to give some context, okay? Because people don't even understand what you just said. But number one, you know, I lived in Moscow in, I was born in 86. I lived in Moscow in the early 90s. Okay. So you can do the math there, right? I was young. But I also, the time before that, I spent in Africa, in Cameroon. And so I was a little African boy. Like, I spoke pidgin English.
I walked the elephants. They're
yeah, I'll show you the ones of me little. That's me older. I'll show you the ones of me little. You know, I I was a little African boy. And then all of a sudden I find myself in Moscow. It's cold. I'm in, like, you know, coats and boots and shoes
and
the babushkas were like, you're never dressed warm enough, you know. And I'm like, well, I'm not used to having to wear all of this, and I want to go play, and I can't play because it's dangerous outside at the time. And
you've been in the 90s. That was the most scary time when it was. I don't know if some people who are listening, they understand what means perestroika. This word, you cannot translate this word for anything else, but it's the time when Soviet Union been broke and Russian Federation become as a new country. So yes, that was the actual this moment. And we had so many mafia people going on. We had so much crime. You could not be safe outside. And I remember how we had people threatening my family that we're going to kill you tomorrow if you will not give us some money. So that was bad. That was super bad. So, yeah.
So I want to talk about this time right because now, even if you were 17 or, like, you know, creating a business at 17 and you're born in the 80s, that puts us in that time frame, you know, a little bit after. And creating, like, you know, what kind of family did you come from? Did you come from wealth, or did you come from, like, you know, just a working family, or, like, you know, like creating a business in that era at that time, to me at that age, it seems like a heavy lift.
Yes, and it was a heavy lift. My family was actually super poor. I can tell it was bad. So I didn't have anything on my fridge, at my fridge. So nothing is inside. You cannot eat anything. Mom was like literally going to the woods, taking some like mushrooms or leaves or whatever. And she was making something from plants that she was able to reap outside. So it was bad. Like, really, people were helping us.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I didn't like it. I was like, no, it's not how it's supposed to be. And I remember how I was calling my sister and I was asking, like, what do you have today for dinner? And she's like, we have grilled chicken. I was like, oh, grilled chicken. I want the grilled chicken. I cannot eat it. Like, we don't have it at home. And I was dreaming how I will actually change something, because I wanted to have pencils like my friends, like these colorful pencils. I wanted to have the pencil cases. I wanted to have like the very simple stuff that everybody had, and I didn't. And by the age of 12, I realized that I was actually pretty good with French. I was fluent, but then I forgot completely because I didn't speak French at all, and I didn't have any practice in 2000. And I really now I cannot even open the mouth about like in French language. So what happened at my age of 12, I decided, okay, I can probably teach kids how to speak French and like help them to adjust their grades. And then I decided, like, okay, how I will find the parents who will trust me because I'm just 12. So I spoke to my elementary teacher that was teaching me like years ago. She said, yeah, of course, you can announce it in my class. And I announced it. I was not scared about anything. And some parents called me and they said, yeah, we want you to teach our kids and help them to raise their grades. And we'll be very thankful. From what I remember, I was charging $6 per hour. So back to 90s, that was a lot.
Rules, and I probably, right? Rules. Yeah, okay.
$6, it was 25 rubles, yeah. $1 was $4, it was $6, about $6, yeah. And I was like, okay. Sounds good. And I was teaching this kid. So you can imagine each kid had 3 classes a week. And I'm like, damn, Gina.
Wow.
Yeah, damn, Gina, wow. I can buy stuff. I was so happy. And I already don't remember how much money it was like per month, but it was a lot. It was more than $100 a month. For me, it was a lot. I was able to make money. I was able to buy stuff. I was able to buy some products like for home, and we've been able to eat something. So I realized that it's working. And when I was in high school, I decided that I am moving to a different school, and I transitioned to a different school, and I was going to the college and school at the same time. It's kind of dual enrollment in the United States, but a little bit different. And I started working at three jobs. So I took three jobs. I was in education in two places, and I was just making money, and I was super happy about it. I'm like, damn, opportunities. Look at the opportunities. Look how much money I can make.
Talk to me about just like a quick question for my own curiosity. Yeah. Like, how is it with your mother? Like when you started making $100 a month and, you know, she's going to the woods to get food, and like, had things changed by then? Or was it like you just started like kind of helping at the house, like with put food? And was it that kind of environment? You know, even me as an American, like in Russia, there was like hardly any, you can't find toys. You couldn't find anything like really, like unless you bought like wood and stuff at the market, adult toys, and made them kids toys. But like, even in the US, like I've always worked three jobs. There's this feeling of being able to like take care of the people you love. Like if you learn that at a young age, that it's like, oh my God, okay. And it just changes the dynamic, I think. It becomes like a team much earlier than like if they're just supporting you the whole time, you know?
Yeah.
I was just wondering how that was at that time, or if it changed by the time you're kind of in college.
It's a great question, because my mom, we're not in a very good connection till now, because at some point when I started being successful, my mom became jealous, and she tried to compete, and actually at some point put me down, not allowing me to do something because my success was interrupting her importance. And I didn't realize it at this age. I realized it when I was already 25, 26. And I didn't understand what is going on wrong, why it's so hard for mom to understand me. But for mom, it was very, it was very satisfying to see how she can, to show me how she's suffering. But she was suffering because she was lazy. She didn't want to go and take a job. And my dad, he actually was like, he didn't make any money. He was going to job, but he didn't make anything. And then they also separated. So it was kind of, you know, nothing is on the table. So, and mom, she didn't like that I was making money. She liked that I'm bringing money home, and she was making me feel guilty. Like, look, when I was working and I was 16 years old, I was bringing money home. You are spending money for yourself. You're buying stuff for yourself. And I was like, mom, but I decided to go to work because we don't have anything at home. And because I also want to be like my friends. And mom was like super mad about it. And I like, okay, so I will share with my mom. So the moment I got kind of everything I wanted at the moment, I started sharing my salary with my earnings, not salary, my earnings with my mom. And I was giving away like 70-75%, and I was keeping for myself 25 or something
I was kind of thinking that was probably happening.
That's exactly what happened. So that was a great question.
Okay, so we're gonna fast forward just a little bit, but so then like you go to you've started a learning center, right? That was like 17-18 or 17, am I right? You're still in Moscow, or you're still in Russia?
Yeah.
Okay, and then you use that business to chop.
I sold this business because my revenue was pretty nice. I was able to go to the restaurants. You cannot imagine my feeling when I went first time at the sushi restaurant. And I was calling my friend and asking her, I'm like, listen, you told me that sushi are great. I'm here first time. I just ordered something. I have no idea how to eat it. Can you guide me? Because I don't want to feel like to look embarrassing here on this place. And that was like, okay, do you see the sticks? Do you like see? And she was really guiding me how I supposed to eat this sushi and what sushi I supposed to order. So that was like, that was my beginning of feeling life differently from what I get used to. But my revenue was not enough to, like, for example, buy a car. And I wanted a car. I was dreaming about the car. And the car I was dreaming is super funny because I don't know if you're familiar with the Dell cars. It's they've been also in the 80s, 90s, maybe a little bit in the early 2000s. And they've been very popular in Russia. Uzbekistan and like union countries. So that was the very small car. A little bit looks like Nissan, not Nissan, hold on, Volkswagen Juke. So it's like the bug one. Yeah, like similar, but much more cheaper. And I wanted this car in a blue color. And I was like, damn, I really want this car. I really want this car. But I didn't have enough of money to buy it. So I'm like, okay, what should I do? What should I do? How I can make money faster? And I realized that then I can actually sell my business. And this is how I'm getting my car. And I sold my business in my 18 years old, 18 and a half something. And I got my first million rubles. That was $35,000. And I got a car.
That's awesome.
I got a car. Yeah, I started traveling. I was so happy. And at some point I realized, like, okay, so my money are actually melting. I have to start something else. Then I launched another company. And then it was another journey, and I sold it again. So that was kind of, I was on a roll to creating companies and selling them, because it became at some point the hobby. So this is
what age was that you sold the first and second one?
First at 18, second, I believe I was 20. Yeah, I was 20 years old. It was May. I remember I got married right after I sold the company. And this is how we got a lot of money for like the good wedding and for and for travels, for the honeymoon, and like a little bit leftovers. Yeah, that was my
So I want to fast forward because we've got like 45 minutes and I need to get to like what you're doing today. Okay. So, yeah. But this is great stuff. Okay, so what people don't understand is that like someone can come to the U.S. and maybe they don't speak English, or you know, maybe they immigrated to the U.S., they moved over, and you're having to start again at school, or let's say like immigration, or you have to go through these different things and have no understanding that in other countries, this person could have been a doctor, this person could have sold five companies, this person could have, you know, it's just not the same. And so, you know, it's like starting over. The experience you just get whenever you're in that kind of environment, I think is just like, I mean, it's light speed compared to sometimes how the maturity process like happens over here. I'm not saying it's all apples and everything like that. I'm generalizing, but like at 20 years old, you've already sold two companies. You've bought your own car. You're paying for a wedding, honeymoon, supporting the family. And we have Americans that do that here too, but it's not, you know, exactly the same. In regards to just like the need, because whenever you're driven, like your want starts at colored pencils, you know, versus someone else wanting the Yeezy shoes, it's not the same, you know. Yeah. It's a little bit different. And I think it's also this experience that lets you, you know, we're talking about evaluating a product, right? And, you know, picking your idea and sticking with it, or picking the right idea and how do you pick the right business you're going to start next. Or I think a lot of that comes down to experience and how many things you've seen, and you've seen like good attempts and bad attempts, and you start, you know, you just start. And we're going to get to that, but I'm leading you up. I'm setting you up for that one. Okay, so company two, how many total companies have you sold, if you know, off top hand?
Let's say about a dozen, maybe a little bit more.
Okay.
I think about a dozen.
That's impressive. That's amazing.
In Russia.
Okay, so in Russia.
We exited three our businesses here last year.
So that makes 15 total, or 12 in Russia, three here?
Something like that.
If I'm not missing any
other company in Russia. But I think, yeah, 12 per absolutely my own companies, yeah.
Okay, so just because I want to talk about what you're doing today, like in the Russian community with the podcast, like, you know, just I think it's really cool, and I want to save a little time for that. Let's fast forward to from when you like, you know, you've gotten married, you've sold a couple of businesses there. Obviously, there's more story there, but you end up like again at a ground zero and discovering e-commerce. Yeah. Like help catch me up there.
So e-commerce became my pretty good friend at the moment when internet came to Russia. So, okay. And I started using ads, momentarily. So when people were like very confused and they kept using the ads and like magazines and newspapers and everywhere else and like billboards, I was already using ads on search engine. And that was my first touch base. In Russia, we had a couple platforms where you were able to sell some stuff, and I was doing it too. So back to 2007, I believe I started learning what is the internet and how the e-commerce works. I just didn't know the word e-commerce for all this. It was something
the internet,
the internet. Just I'm doing business on the internet. That's it. So when I came to United States in 2015. You've mentioned like people don't know a language or like it's a foreign language. Yes, that's correct. Like all my language was hi and bye, this, and that. And I was hilarious with some stuff. So I really didn't understand what credit means, because for me, credit is financing. And when I was calling to the companies, like electric companies, and I was asking to make a adjustment of my bills because I overpaid something, and they said, okay, man, we're so sorry, we're giving you a credit. And I was yelling at these people trying to tell them that I don't need a credit, and they've been explaining to me that credit is fine. And like, so at the end of the conversation, I was so disappointed that I couldn't explain them that I don't need a credit. And then my friends explained that the credit is not the financing, they just like credit in your account. So, and like I went through all this change in mentality, adjustments, learning language, understanding that everything is different. And I had like few months to realize what I want to do and what I have to do. So I lost my 100K and I had this leftover of 5,000, and I decided that I'm going to invest that on Amazon. And the first product I decided to sell on Amazon was silicone wine glass. Guys, don't do it again. It's not the right time to do it. So it was very nice in 2015, 2016, and even 2017. And I got the return of $14,000. And I was kind of pretty happy because I'm like, oh, okay, so now I can pay my bills and Amazon is actually working. That was my first emotion. Look, Amazon is working. I'm making like $300-$400 a day pure income, and it's working. I'm so happy it's working. And I started launching another product and another product. In total, I launched, I don't know, a lot. It's more than 100. It's about maybe 200 different ASINs. I was learning a lot. Not every single product was successful. Maybe every other one was failing. Like, of course, with like experience, success rate was raising and failure was kind of smaller and smaller and smaller, but we still have some experience right now when we're failing with the products. It's just different failure right now. It's when we're like going through the validation of the product through the analytics. And of course, we can always miscalculate something. However, given how much data we have right now, we didn't have this data, and I was not educated in 2015. I remember I was using Hello Profit, and I didn't know what I supposed to see there, actually. I was just looking at the profit margin, that's it. Right now, we're using AdReads Momentum, we're using five different platforms, and we're using different software that we're validating the product. That we're looking not just like high demand, low competition. We're looking at what specific keyword has potential conversion rate, where we can narrow the niche, where we can find the low purchase rate. Is this purchase rate actually real? Well, people are buying this product off Amazon. We found yesterday the product for our customer that the purchase rate, I think something like 0.3 or 0.4. And the competition is not exist because it's just 3 or 4 sellers on Amazon and maybe 5 or 10 off Amazon. And I still don't understand how it's happening because the niche is so obvious. And I was, even when I was looking at the niche, I didn't expect that I can find something like that. And I was like, probably the software is lying. Maybe something is wrong. But I validated through like 5 of them. And I went to Amazon Product Opportunity Explorer. I'm like, damn. It's actually real. So like we searched through that, like after that, we started doing the research with the consumers, with the avatar And we found out that actually market is missing. People are looking for those products. People are asking on the forums, on Facebook groups, like, guys, where can I find this? And people are ending up buying this product customizable on Etsy because they can't find something that will satisfy their
handmade
needs.
Or something. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, well, that's great. Great opportunity. Let's do it. So yeah, we're developing this product right now because we went through like the process of data, demand, competition, and consumer demand based on the actual product. And we narrowed this product to really 4 or 5 variations.
I love it. Are you excited?
Yes, I am. And actually today found from the similar niche, we found another product for another customer. And I was also like, it's no way. It is no way this niche is like so empty. So when people are thinking, oh, no way you're going on Amazon, it's no opportunities there. No, you guys wrong. There are plenty of them. You just have to find them.
And, you know, I think like to add my 2 cents to that, whenever you think about like 2015, you could almost make more mistakes back then and still be successful and still hit runway. Yeah. You didn't have to be as good at storytelling. You didn't have to be as precise with keywords because there was less competition. PPC was cheaper. Not everyone was doing it, you know, so you could find these gaps and have a year runway or 2 years runway. The big known brands weren't on Amazon as much. In my opinion, it was, you know, it's all private label. And now we're in 2022 and, you know, aggregators come into the space, you know, more sellers than ever. The pandemic pushes brands into Amazon and everyone's panicking. And you're right. It's harder to find, like, let's say, even compare it to real estate. It's harder to find a good deal where you're going to, you know, buy a house and be able to flip it or, you know, find a great deal. But just because I don't find a deal doesn't mean there's still not tons of opportunity. And I'm someone that's like, you know, 11 years in the space. I've launched lots of products and categories that didn't exist yet. There was no Hello Profit, Helium 10, Jungle Scout, you know, information on, yes, these products have been here and people are buying them and like, you know, create another product like it. It was in the early days before all of the consumers were even there yet searching. Like, so how would you have the keyword search volume if that category hasn't like brought those products in? All the way down to launching products that, you know, like there's an example I've given before, but it's like men's suspenders. And this is like years ago, so I don't mind talking about it. But there was keyword search and there were competitors that were at like the $19.99 price point or whatever. And people, you know, people would look and, oh, my God, Amazon's for the cheap products. There's no one else like selling it like this. They didn't see it as an opportunity. Instead, they said, like, well, no one else is doing it. Why would I do it? And I've always just been the type to be like, well, that's an opportunity. No one else is doing it, you know? And so we ended up being successful. They were $120 men's suspenders, like very formal men's suspenders. And I was like, you know what? There's a lot of demand for suspenders. I'm someone that lives in the Midwest where shopping and retail, we don't have all of the latest designer stuff. We have like malls, like basic malls with like Hot Topics and Macy's and things like this. And so if you care about fashion, you have to get online a lot of times to go find stuff that's in, you know, New York or LA or wherever, unless you travel. And I'm like, why wouldn't that, you know, that data across the all of the US, there's so many people that are not close to a metropolitan area or have that kind of thing. But plenty of people go to formal events. And this is not something I could find in a Jungle Scout, right? This is something that was like, you're evaluating an idea, your gut says that it's a great product, they're doing well on a website. Amazon's not showing that it's there yet. Is that an opportunity? You know, and we ended up like we did, I think 250,000 that year in sales, like without even knowing everything I know now, it was like a huge success. I was probably charging pennies to do that kind of work back then. I'm just adding that because it's like, for me, these tools are great to like validate that people are there looking and you can be as precise as you want with the tools, but also sometimes being the first one to a niche or a product category or something like that.
Or the second one at least, yeah.
Or the number five. Like on Amazon, us saying 4 or 5 competitors to us is like, oh my God, it's like there's no competitors. Like, you know, 4 or 5 is nothing. And so seeing those things as maybe it's not validating that someone's crushing it there, but it's also saying this is a very like viable product in retail in different scenarios, and this would be a great opportunity to bring here. I think it's just a thinking difference that people taking courses get shown how to do all of the data work, or they get, but they're not always thinking like a creative person. And I think that's something really valuable. I took a minute for that one, and I have another question for you. I want to lead the discussion, but before we do, once again, finding expert software developers doesn't have to be difficult, especially when you visit fullscale.io. We can build a software team quickly and affordably. Use the Fullscale platform to define your technical needs and then see available developers, testers, and leaders that are ready to join your team. Visit fullscale.io to learn more. Very thankful for our sponsors. Without them, we wouldn't be able to promote the show and be able to keep it free. So thank you, fullscale.io. Isabella, okay, I want to talk about, you know, evaluating a product idea. And we talked about you found a couple in this niche and you're super excited. But let's get real specific with somebody that might be doing it themselves, you know, or like, you know, in a perfect world, they would hire you to help them. Of course, we know that. But let's say that they're like, you know, they're listening to the podcast and they're someone that's like, I want to build a business online.
I need
a direction
that I want to go with. Yeah.
Yeah. Where do they start? Like for me, it's traveling, and I get inspiration when I'm like around other people and different things, and I get ideas and I'm like, okay, that's, I really saw this. I don't usually see this. This is a really cool thing. I'm going to look into this. Like it's definitely travel that inspires me and gets me creative. For other people, it's something different. Where do you think someone should start? That's just like, I want to do this. What's ground zero?
So right now, as you mentioned, and I mentioned, we have a lot of different tools. And if we will look at the YouTube videos, the free ones, a lot of coaches are recommending people to start with the bestsellers. So I do not really recommend this. I actually recommend not to do that. However, you can start with the bestsellers only if it will be something. Let me see what the seller is also selling on Amazon. And then let me see what this product, like another product that the seller is selling, what other products are being bought with this product. Until you will start just dig deeper, deeper and deeper, and you're already so far away from the bestsellers, but you're somewhere where your eye can catch something that you probably will like. So you have to find this point when you will start validating the products with, for example, Helium 10 and DataDive. DataDive, if you guys don't know, it's a new tool, super great, recommended to everyone. Brendan Young created it, I believe, a year ago. They launched it in September or October 2021, and they're growing pretty fast because, yes, it's for advanced. Yes, you have to understand the numbers. However, staying on a page, on Amazon page, when you already clicked on the product, so you're inside of the listing, you have a button. Dive, I believe it calls dive into the niche or niche dive. Niche dive. And you can see so many different keywords related to this product. Some of those keywords will guide you somewhere where you would never expect. And you just again start and dig deeper and dig deep deeper. And then you found another product that you probably like, and you see the good numbers that like someone with 13 reviews is selling for $15,000. And then you're starting validating this product. You're checking the keyword for that you are assuming that will be probably the best keyword for this product. Or you're doing like you're running Cerebra from Helium 10 and you're checking, okay, those are keywords that are actually working for this specific product. And then you're going on Amazon searching for this specific keyword. And then you can start checking the niche. If this product with 13 reviews and $15,000 is just accident, or that niche is actually behaving this well. So, and then you at least you can start there before you will start all this validation process. But don't try to like come up with something like, what should I buy? What should I sell on Amazon? Or you can just look around. What do you use? You are one of the avatars who are buying a lot of stuff. You're using a lot of stuff on a daily basis. Sometimes we even don't notice in how much stuff we're using every single day. Of course, if you will start looking at the toothbrush or toothpaste, like, don't start there, because those niches are already filled with the competitors, with the big players, like years and years ago. So you shouldn't go to those niches. But something like that is maybe in your room, something that may be in your car, not like, again,
can we talk about this just for a second as a two, yeah, as a like 2 cents? So I launched a brand maybe close to 5 years ago, and I'm still with them. Bruch, okay, out of Canada, Bruush. They're electric, okay, toothbrushes. Okay. And they have amazing branding. They had like a great firm. They're like getting capital raises, series raises, and all kinds of things. They're like, you know, they're crushing it now. But at the time, they were a small Canadian brand. And for me, I was excited because I was taking them from Canada to Amazon.com. So an international thing. I get really excited about international brands for some reason. I just like working worldwide, you know. And in Canada, we did okay because they kind of had top of funnel brand awareness. In .com, it was like pulling teeth to launch a toothbrush. Even though the quality is amazing, it's like opening the box from an Apple phone. Like, it's like really good quality. And that, you know, if I give it, everyone has loved it. It didn't matter because the competition had been there so long. They have the biggest players in the space. They have like Philips Sonicare, and they have, you know, everything that you're saying. But the thing that mattered there was they made a partnership with Kevin Hart last year, I think. And so we went from not being able to compete in the Amazon marketplace to having enough budget. You have to have a ton of budget, right? So this isn't for the new seller, but I want to validate what you're saying. We took this product that we couldn't compete. If you have enough budget to pay one of the biggest entertainers in the industry to put his name now, right, on your product, we're having, right, crazy success, you know? So that's the type of firepower you have to have. If that's the, yeah, game you're playing, you can win in that way. But if you don't have that firepower, you need to essentially stay away from the big dogs, so, yeah, to speak. And yeah, okay.
And I absolutely agree there. Just my assumption that most of the people who are listening, they are not owning millions and millions of dollars that they're ready to invest like that. So yes, if you sometimes when you're launching the products, you should also look at the bloggers and influencers. Take a look what they are promoting, what do they like, because sometimes you can create the brand based on some influencers, one of the influencers' name, and they will be happy to put their name because they don't have to invest any money, but this product will make them popular. And yep, they will make this product popular. So people love their ego. So if you come up to someone, you can say, okay, so you're, for example, in a healthy industry, or you're like fitness trainer. So do you want to be on my, I don't know, whatever supplement is, or whatever machine is, or whatever, like this resistance band or whatever. It's just I'm playing in my head different products. And they probably do. And they'll say, yeah, of course I want to. Like, they probably sometimes will not even ask you for the rev share just because it's more awareness and because
free product, it's showing that they're getting stuff. Yeah. It's like, I'm really finding, yeah, it very successful. And like, so, you know, for people evaluating a product, I think it's a great idea to think about, like, is this something I could get maybe someone in this space to promote and give you an advantage? And to your point, like when you're searching the keyword, one thing I found evaluating a product was, if you don't have social media, if you don't have like some of these abilities to market in a different way than Amazon, because Amazon is direct response. Like we were talking about keywords, and that's how you're saying find a product in it. And so you find a good keyword and you find another keyword, you dig and you dig and you dig, and then you find a gap and an opportunity, an opening. A lot of the times that I failed on Amazon without an influencer, without these things, because like my product would fail, would be because I found an amazing product, but it was like an invention. It was like I needed to create demand generation, which means no one's searching for it yet because they don't know about it, but eventually they will, right? So it's a longer game. And then it's, okay, if that's the case and I have a product like this, I'm thinking of a product, I found one I really love, but there's not the keyword backing behind it, that's okay, but you need to know that you're going to need off Amazon marketing
you have to
make
to create
it work.
This niche. Yeah, you have to create the demand.
You have to create the niche.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a
which
different
is doable,
game.
But it's a different yeah. game.
It's a different game. It's super expensive. And at this point, you are not starting on Amazon hoping that Amazon buyers are going to buy this product, because you have to make sure you will explain people before what they're looking for.
D2C yeah. play, in my opinion.
Yeah,
website
correct.
Play.
Yeah, correct. 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 Yeah. And like when we're launching something heavy, we're asking influencers, we're asking our customers for the email list to do the pre-launch, because doing this pre-launch and when people can pre-order on Amazon, then the moment product is live, people has a lot of sales, and then of course their product ranked, and it, like you have this whole ranking awareness and everything else. But yes, you're absolutely right. It's absolutely a different game.
Those were just many of the times I lost without knowing why. Was like, because I would launch some products in a category that didn't exist and they would do well. And it was like the first in the category or fifth in the category. And other times I'm launching it and I'm like, we just can't find enough keywords that are converting. And that issue was, you can make it work. You need that pre-launch strategy. You need the email list. You need the social media. It can work. It needs more. So I think that to me also cuts like the product selection into half. Maybe half are like invention, demand generation, and then the other half are better for Amazon, which are keyword-driven searches, a product that's being looked for but not there. To me, that's like a key way to start, kind of just first off. Don't pick something that's super hard to explain if you're not good,
right.
If you're not amazing at marketing yet, right? Like it might be a super cool invention that you love, but if it's hard to explain that to someone, you know, stick away from that too. Just want to get your thoughts on that. And like, as you're like, because that excludes all the words that don't have keywords for them, you know? Like,
yeah.
Those won't ever show up. They won't ever show up if they're not being searched for. What do you feel about reviews when like evaluating whether a product might be a good idea or not? I know in the past it was like simply like if you had more than the other seller, it was like, it felt like reviews was the main difference. Today,
yeah.
I'm not sure that's the case. What do you think?
First of all, Amazon changed reviews to ratings. So okay. It's not about reviews only. It's also about the rating. And when you do, like a lot of people, when they're buying right now, they can just give you stars instead of giving you the full review. And that's the case right now. It's actually much easier for the consumer to rate your product without writing the review. So in this case, it's easier. Answering your question, is it important? Yes, it is. Very. So, and given that only, like, based on this real statistics, only about 5-6% of people are leaving your review. So imagine you have to make at least 100 sales to get 5 reviews. Amazon pretty bad right now at the wine program. Like, we launched maybe 35 customers since May. Summarizing all the reviews we got from the products, maybe 7. Not every single product got reviews from Vine program. And I believe, yeah, those 7 products, they just got 1 review. We didn't get anything else. And I remember when I think Amazon launched this Vine program like 2 or 3 years ago, 2.5 probably, these first 30 reviews you've been getting like within a week. Within 2 weeks. And how it's working, because influencers became lazy because they have so many options to get these products, and they also tired to write these reviews. They don't need so many products, free products from Amazon, that because they cannot resell it, generally speaking. Some of them are reselling, some of them like, you can give so many gifts to your friends, so you cannot store it in your house. That's why, my opinion, that's why this Vine program is not working anymore that much. So yes, you have to look at the amount of reviews of your competitors. So if you see that next to yourself, your potential self, that when you'll be on Amazon, some competitors with 15, 20, 50 reviews exist and they're doing well, perfect. Look at the niche more carefully and attentively, and probably you'll be able to get in. But if the seller with the lowest amount of reviews is like 600, and everybody else like at 8,000, 30,000, don't go there. You will not be able to compete because your conversion rate will never get to 600 reviews till like before you'll spend, I don't know, a lot of money on the PPC and external traffic and everything else.
Great advice. We have like 2 minutes to wrap up. I've pushed us past time. We took time chatting. We're just going to have a part two because I'm personally someone that's sourcing and developing my own products now. It's not where I got my start. It's something kind of newer to me. I know how to launch other people's products that are already created and do an amazing job of launching them. But, you know, really defining exactly what is this going to be successful or not, or, you know, those things are still new to me. So extremely interesting. And we'll have to connect offline as well. But I'd love to have you back on the show for a kind of part two of taking it from kind of the research to then, okay, maybe the testing phase or the market research or like the customer avatar and that stage of evaluating a product and what to look for. So until we'll get people coming back. But as a way to sign off, just like where can people reach you? Where can people like tune into your podcast? Is it only in Russian? Or do you do Russian English?
I don't do podcast in Russian. I do podcast in English, and we're doing Russian subtitles on the video version.
Okay, so, forgive me, yes, I forgot.
People who speak in Russian, they can read, and people who speak in English, they can listen and watch, so they don't have to read. So yes, we do both, and you can guys find me on LinkedIn, Isabella Ritz with a Z and double L, or just our website, RITZ, arm, like hand, ritzarm.com, and we're happy to help anybody. We're doing the, usually we have free first evaluation. If you need to test your idea or you have to ask, you want us to take a look at your product, just fill out the form and we'll be happy to take a look and like on the surface and let you know like if we can help or we cannot help. So we're not charging anything if we cannot help. So we're here for people.
I love it, Isabella. Your story is amazing. Your journey has been amazing. And are you going to be at the Surge Summit?
Yes, Tampa, and I saw your speaking there, and I'm there at the panel. So actually, after this podcast, I'm going to talk to them because we have to discuss some arrangements at 5 p.m. Eastern time. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I think this episode is actually going to be going live the week of Surge Summit. So we're right around the corner. I'm super excited to connect anyone in the area. Would love to see you guys there September 6th through the 8th. Thank you again for tuning in, hustlers. You guys are amazing. And a shout out again to our sponsor, Fullscale.io, helping you build software teams quickly and affordably. We'll see you next time, guys.
Yeah, see you. Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Startup Hustle's brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.